Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and every god I do.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Calvin Schultz. Calvin is a local Know Your Source advocate, and he's a local rancher. First of all, let's talk about your family, Calvin. How long have they been in Humboldt County?
On my mom's side, we're Bricelands. John Briceland came to Humboldt County in the, you know, in the 1849s, 50s, came to Trinidad and then ended up running mules up into the Trinity mines. Decided that gold mining wasn't there, so he might as well make money hauling freight, which he did pretty good. And went to Southern Humboldt and homesteaded a bunch of property and ended up building the town of Briceland. And they had the Wagner Leather Company there, which was a lot of tan oak in Southern Humboldt. So they used to cut down the tan oaks and peel the bark, and then they tanned leather there. First they hauled it to Shelter Cove, and then later they did it on site. My great-grandfather, Carl Briceland, one of nine kids there, half Indian. Mother was a Wailaki. John Briceland had a couple of wives. First one was a Yurok, the second was a Wailaki. He was born in 1898, so he's the one that pretty much raised me, my influence. His son, Calvin, who I was named after, got killed after World War II. He was in the Seabees in the Pacific, came home. Wrecked his motorcycle, and that was that. But my mother and my Aunt Gloria were the last two Bricelands. My mom passed away, but my Aunt Gloria is still alive. She lives in Fortuna. On the Schultz side, on my dad's side, Schultzes have been farming in Ronerville for about five generations, same as the Bricelands. Don't know a whole lot about them. They are buried in Ronerville Cemetery. Most of the Schultzes that I knew, they came back in the 50s and worked in the plywood mills.
Uh-huh. And then where is your ranch located and how big is it?
We had 96 acres. Was bigger until when Grandpa died, we split off my aunt's part, and then she subsequently sold it to these other people. But we've kept 96 acres of the family place. At one time, we probably had out in Matole probably 4,000 or 5,000 acres. But they got old and they sold the place closer to the doctor. I'm out of Grizzly Bluff right across from where the Van Dusen comes into the Eel. So I'm kind of out of the fog belt and up on a bench about 400 feet above the river.
And what kind of crops and animals have you raised out in that area?
We raise sheep now, grass for hay. We've raised beef cows in the past. We've got beef cows now. We have a man who brings cows to us, and he pays us for how much they gain, and that's been lucrative. I mean, mostly just trying to resurrect the farmland. When all these years gone by, not knowing what we know now, we were way overstocked. You know, the property was way overrun. There wasn't very much production, but since then we've done better. We've fallowed the whole place for the first time in 40 years. Just took all the stock off it and left it sit for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
It made a big difference in the soil.
So it's mostly sheep now that you're raising?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then let's talk about your garden, because it sounds like you're pretty self-sufficient out there. You've got a two-acre garden.
Yeah.
That's pretty big.
Yeah, well, it's...
I know there are some farms that are 2 acres, some smaller farms.
Right, and I'm pretty intense with it, too. Uh-huh. And we got kind of what we call the old garden or the fruit yard, which is what I had when I first moved there. And it's got most of the orchard in it now, and I raise my berry patch, and I do raise squash and some other things out in there. And then we got the new part, which is on the other side of the new house, which I built 20 years ago. And that one's probably about an acre and a half in size. And that one I just do with a tractor, nice and open, make my rows. And, But I still do everything by hand once I get it tilled up.
And then I'm imagining how much that produces. That's quite a bit.
Yeah, it does.
And what
good.
Do you do with all that?
I feed all my friends and neighbors. You know, I've done the farmers markets, and it's fun, but it's, you know, I'm not trying to make a living off my, you know, it's like trying to, the people that are, I try to stay out of their way.
Right, yeah.
And, but, you know, I like giving my food away. It's a fun thing, you know, and all my customers in my stove business, and I, you know, it's like, you want some potatoes, you want some squash, you know, and nobody wants zucchinis, but if I show up with a big Hubbard, they're always happy. And, and some things, like, I got a big hoop house that I grow tomatoes and things in, but I can't hardly grow them outside.
Right.
You know, so it's like I got to mimic Orleans. Corn and stuff is, you know, some years I get good corn crops, sometimes not. It just depends. But mostly what I grow is lots of green beans, lots of peas. I can grow that stuff all the way up into the fall.
Let's talk about one of the interesting things that you have done out on your farms, you know, is tell the crab story.
This is our latest thing. Well, my son's a soil scientist, and so he was approached by the fellows that have the local processing plant in Eureka that process all the crab. Pretty much we found out on the West Coast all comes to this plant, and also all the shrimp catch from a variety of sources from all the West Coast. So they were telling him, lamenting that it was costing them $4,000 a week to haul all the crab shells down to San Leandro to a waste processing facility, and they didn't know what to do with it locally. So we're going, we'll take it, because we have a hill farm, and we're not a dairy. We don't have a big cash flow to where we can buy chemical fertilizers, nor do we want to, where you buy the triple 20 Simplot and pour it on your fields with a spreader and hope your grass grows green. So the thing we found out is that most of our soil is depleted in calcium because it's been leached out all these years from the rain that we get, lots and lots of rain. And without the calcium, the nitrogen is not released. So the crab shells work good. We started piling them up.
How many crab shells are we talking about here?
Well, at first they come, you know, with a truckload a day, dump truckload. Well, that was manageable. We could keep up with that. John got an old manure spreader, and he was out after work every night spreading crab shells. And it really wasn't that bad smelling, because people would come and they were going, oh, it smells like the ocean. You know? Okay, good. You know,
but then it got to be low tide, I'm thinking.
Yeah, it got to be low tide. We had that stretch of warm weather there in January. And by that time, they're bringing me 5 dump truck loads a day. So pretty soon, we have a pile of crab shells cooking real good, steam every morning, probably 500 yards long and 40 yards wide and 15 feet tall.
Wow.
Well, at that point, well, we're spreading them and putting them on everywhere, crab shells on the fields. And we never did it before. Nobody's ever done this before. And the crabs themselves, when they back them at the processing plant, they're not cooked. They do them while they're alive, and they take the backs off and the innards and all that, and then they're freezing the meat and uncooked for restaurant trade. And so we were getting the stuff, and it's fresh. Well, great. Well, the birds got fat off all the maggots, really fat. Robins couldn't walk.
Let alone fly.
Let alone fly. And, you know, all these songbirds got real happy on our place. Well, the smell started coming to where it was like coming off the bluff, because I live on top of this bluff. And so the neighbors started complaining. But they didn't come to see us because, well, one set of neighbors are not from around these parts. And so they called the sheriff. And the other neighbor who I went to high school with thought we were burying dead cows or something. So he called the EPA. And so we had all these visitors within a short period of time want to know what we're doing. Well, so we called off the crab shell guys. And so now they're diverting them. They're taking them up to Crescent City and putting them on a dairyman's place up there. Right now, my fields are so green and the grass is growing so fast that we've got twice as many cows put on there than we had before, rotating pastures. You know, the sheep, they're lambing. You see them, they're walking around. They got crab shells stuck to them, their butts. You know, the cows are crunching around in the crab shells, and they eat around them, and it's just fine. And now most of the crab shells have vaporized. And some of them, we were going to experiment. We were going to run the tractor and the mower over them and try to just lift them up and vaporize them, but they just seem to be breaking down on their own. So next year, we can't wait for more crab shells.
Right. It seems like such a great resource right here in Humboldt County, and it's something that they were having to truck 300 miles south of here to dispose of.
Right. And even though the local dirt guys, all these dirt manufacturers that we have here now, rejected it. They didn't want anything to do with it because a lot of them are bringing in seafood waste from overseas to make their products. And so it's like, it was stupid, but in the hand, you know, it's like our little secret. And so every day, all these guys were watching this dump truck come over with the crab juice running out of it all the way through the valley and up my hill to my place, you know, and they're like, what's going on?
Now the story's out, and I'm afraid there's going to be, you know, you're going to have to compete for the crab.
That's right. People may pay for this crab. We figured the fertilizer value alone was probably $500 a truckload.
Wow.
Of what we'd have to buy, which we couldn't afford. And so it's a natural thing. And so some of my neighbors really complained. And one who, you know, I just said, well, where do you think? He's lamenting to me when I first met him that he couldn't buy any organic food without going to Arcata because of his kids and all that. And I'm going, so where do you think the calcium comes from that goes in milk, that goes in the animal's bones? It has to come out of the grass.
Yeah.
And so you either buy it from a factory in Idaho, a chemical factory, and bring it here and put it on, or we put on the crab shells.
Yeah. Well, this has been an interesting story. I'd like to come back with you next week and talk a little bit more about some of these systems of farming and using some of these natural resources. This is Jennifer Bell, and I've been talking with Calvin Schultz.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and every god I do. Come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden, and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.